You're welcome back. And as we've been hearing, almost 42 months since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the US President Donald Trump and Russia's Vladimir Putin are preparing for their much anticipated Alaska summit. The meeting will focus on bringing an end to the war, something Mr. Trump once boasted he could achieve in a day. However, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky won't be there. Shortly, we'll be hearing from some of the tens of thousands of Ukrainian people now living in Ireland. But first, we're joined by Luke Harding, senior international correspondent with The Guardian, who has written extensively about Russia. Luke, thanks for being with us this afternoon. Can you sketch out for us what's likely to be on the table today?
Yeah, well, Rachel, I think this is a big win already for Vladimir Putin. He's coming to Alaska. He's meeting with Donald Trump. He's no longer an international pariah. And I think he'll be kind of pressing his version of what's been going on in Ukraine, saying that Ukraine is not a state. We hear he may be showing maps, old maps, to Donald Trump. I think restating his Maximus demands, which include more Ukrainian territory that Russia currently does not control, and saying that Russian victory is inevitable. And lastly, I think blaming Volodymyr Zelensky and the Europeans and saying they are the impediment here, they are the problem, they're the obstacle to peace and a deal.
Depending on the day, Donald Trump has said different things about his hopes for this meeting. So what are you expecting?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, Rachel, I'm expecting a lot of grandstanding from Donald Trump. There's going to be this joint press conference, of course, I think in the early hours of the morning, with the two leaders standing together. And you'll remember their last encounter in Helsinki in 2018, where Trump really looked pretty disorientated and ended up repeating Russian talking points that the Russians had not interfered in the US presidential election. I think the Ukrainians, and I know them well, they're kind of bracing themselves for what Trump is going to say, whether we're going to be in the kind of territory we were in February. You remember the infamous Oval Office encounter where Trump is basically blaming Zelensky for everything.
If anything is announced after this meeting and Ukraine doesn't agree to it, what then?
Well, there are lots of things the Americans can do which would be extremely unhelpful. I mean, American military assistance to Ukraine is practically stopped already, but intelligence is still flowing. The US is selling, or says it's going to sell, advanced anti-aircraft systems to Germany and other European partners, which are passed on to Ukraine. Now, if that flow stops, this will be problematic for Ukraine, to say the least, at a time when the Russians are going forward in the east of the country, not rapidly, but village by smash village. So that's a problem. And it's also a big question for Europe. I mean, what will Ireland do? What will the UK do? What will France and Germany do if the US completely abandons Ukraine, which of course is what Putin wants? He wants to drive a wedge between the Trump administration and the Europeans. And it was interesting to see that Zelensky was in London yesterday, really trying to sort of shore up support and show that European solidarity is a real thing.
Donald Trump, I think, has suggested that depending on how this meeting with Vladimir Putin goes, there might then be a second meeting which would involve Vladimir Zelensky.
Well, I mean, there might be a second meeting, but I don't see a scenario in which Putin and Zelensky can meet, certainly not at this stage. I mean, Putin says that Zelensky is not legitimate, that he's not an elected leader, he doesn't recognize him. And one of his aims is the Russians talk about denazification, but that's basically shorthand for getting rid of Zelensky and replacing him with a kind of pro-Russian client administration. And I've seen no signs so far that Putin is prepared to dial back on any of these demands, which are really completely unacceptable for Ukraine. And I think one other thing, this is about the sort of world order that we have. I mean, do we have a world order where small countries can determine their own choices, elect their own governments and so on? Or is it a place where great powers carve up the map between them? And that is very much the Putin model of how geopolitics should work. And I think he sees in Donald Trump a sympathetic interlocutor who really wants a deal at any cost and doesn't care much about the detail or the people living there.
And if he doesn't get a deal, can you see Donald Trump just walking away from this?
I mean, anything is possible. I mean, no one quite knows what he will do. And I think one of the problems with trying to interpret Trump and Russia, I mean, the last few months have actually, the Ukrainians think they more or less fixed their relations with Trump, is that he's extremely inconsistent. You remember a week ago, he was talking about punitive sanctions against Russia. And instead, what we get is this summit in Alaska instead. And I think that the secret with Trump is to look at actually what he does rather than what he says, which changes day by day and hour by hour. And what we can say is that consistently, since he came back to the White House in January, he's taken no meaningful steps to punish Russia. And I would say he really is the most pro-Russian president in American history. And just how pro-Russian he is, I guess we will find out later today.
Luke Harding, thank you very much for joining us. Well, tens of thousands of Ukrainians have been living here since the war broke out 3.5 years ago, and they're waiting to hear the outcome of today's meeting. Carol Coleman has been speaking to some of them.
The main hope that I have from this meeting is that people will stop dying because of the war. For me, that's the most important thing.
That's Bogdan from central Ukraine, now a Ukrainian support worker in County Kerry. He says he's not into politics, but he does have hopes and fears for today's meeting.
My biggest fear about this meeting that Russia might pull America to its side, sending a message to the world that the strong can crush the weak, simply take the territories, resources, wherever they need, knowing that there will be no consequences.
Olya Ponomarenko, who lives in Tralee, also harbours hopes and fears in equal measure.
There is a hope that international dialogue might finally bring an end to that war and the suffering it has caused to our country and to people. And on the other hand, of course, there is a deep fear that those negotiations could come to an expense of Ukrainians' sovereignty.
Okay. And do you think that most Ukrainians might accept some sort of a compromise just to end this terrible war?
Well, actually, if we are talking about our expectations, we will watch closely. We are hoping that our voices will not be ignored, and it is not the appeasement. We can't talk about the giving up our territories or our identity or something like that.
And just tell me, Olya, you yourself are from a place in eastern Ukraine. Just tell me about that.
Well, actually, my town is not very big. It is called Verdansk, and it was occupied by Russians on the third day of war. And I was living under occupation for half of a year, and then I got a chance just to run out.
Okay. And people at home, your family, are they must be hoping for an end to the bloodshed.
We are all hoping for the end, but the question is, what price?
Back in Dublin, Anatoly Primakov is not excited that there will be a good outcome for Ukraine.
No, because any agreements that are being made without involving Ukraine and all of us in Europe, I doubt that they would be made in the best interests of Ukraine and Europe overall. And that is the main issue with this meeting and with this summit.
Now, Donald Trump says that there will be a second summit involving President Zelensky, more inclusive. Do you think that there could be a ceasefire out of this?
I'm doubtful because, it's we're all obviously following what, the US and the Russian, state representatives are saying, right? But when it comes to Russia, Russians have promised ceasefires for, many times before. They've set out many conditions for ceasefires before that, that weren't even great conditions. And then the Ukrainian leadership and European leadership made a lot of steps to meet those conditions, only for the Russians to then move the goalposts once again and not go ahead with any ceasefires. So I'm very doubtful of any ceasefire being reached based on this meeting.
And that report was from Carol Coleman.